from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. District Attorney George Gascon announced yesterday that the two SFPD officers involved in the fatal shooting of 20-year-old Amilcar Perez Lopez in the Mission District in 2015 will not face criminal charges, citing insufficient evidence.
If we cannot show beyond a reasonable doubt that the officers lack a reasonable justification for their actions, then we cannot charge the case.
We'll discuss the decision at 9, and then at 9:30 we'll hear about a proposal by Supervisor Katie Tang that would make San Francisco the lactation-friendliest city in the nation. It's all coming up on Forum after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The two San Francisco police officers involved in the fatal shooting of 20-year-old Amilcar Perez Lopez in the Mission District back in 2015 will not face criminal charges. District Attorney George Gascon announced his decision yesterday, citing insufficient evidence and statements from officers that Lopez may have attacked another man and lunged toward the police officers with a knife before he was shot. Critics have called the shooting an example of excessive force, pointing to evidence that Lopez was shot in the back. And the controversy contributed to the resignation of former police chief Greg Serb, who remains a defendant in a civil case tied to the shooting. Joining us to talk about the story is KQED News reporter Alex Emsley. Alex, good morning.
Hi, thank you.
Let's try to trace back on this. There are no criminal charges, and yet, as I said in the introduction, critics talk about shots in the back. There are different accounts. How did the district attorney come to this decision? How did he decide, essentially, that it was not worthy of bringing forward criminal charges?
Well, I think we should break it down a little bit in this way. Because we've never seen a police officer face criminal charges in San Francisco under this DA or going back really far, then what we have are sort of two types of decisions that this DA makes in these kinds of cases. There's one in which he says that the evidence shows that the use of force was justified, and there's one, and this case is an example of it, where he says that there is insufficient evidence to bring charges to a jury, basically. So it's sort of a less certain decision on the part of the DA backing up the officer's use of force and is relying on just a lack of evidence to prove a criminal charge.
The definition would be use of force that is justified in terms of the public or in terms of the defense of others?
Yeah, that's the DA talked about some of his thought process in coming to this decision, and he considers potential defenses that the officers would bring were they to face a criminal jury trial. The major one here is self-defense or defense of others, which is a right of anyone in the state, really. Self-defense is a claim that makes a homicide justifiable. But it is especially true and in other places in the state penal code for police officers.
You were talking about the history of these decisions. This is the first decision in 26 months by George Gascon.
There's been a delay, and this case has its own reasons for that, one of which the district attorney's office was fairly vocal about early in this case was they weren't notified right after the shooting. So there was a delay in district attorney's investigators getting to the scene. So they said that they had to do a lot of reinvestigation that they may not have otherwise have done. But then there's this broader issue of a backlog of officer-involved shooting investigations at the DA's level.
It's also the Justice Department, of course. I mean, you know, making itself felt in terms of police shootings.
Yeah, yeah. And no one wants to see these cases drag on as long as the Amilcar Perez Lopez case has, I think. But it's not just that case, right? I mean, there are several that have stretched longer than a year. So there's, you know, questions of funding, staff resources in the DA's office to complete these investigations and to now chip away at a fairly large backlog. And in the meantime, so the district attorney's office has created a specialized unit to focus just on that and is close to taking over the lead role in officer-involved shooting investigations from the police department. The funding's there. The district attorney's unit is there and staffed. They're still negotiating how that will actually work with the police department and the police officers union.
We're talking to Alex Emsley, who is a reporter for KQED News. A lot of this decision by District Attorney Gascon seemed to have to do with an expert on the use of force, Charles Key, who was kind of the key to this in many ways, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, there is this moment in the shooting of Amilcar Perez Lopez. It really boils down to just these couple of seconds when he has a knife, there is another man on the scene that he was in a fight with, and there's these two plainclothes police officers. And
the other man said, in fact, his life was saved by the police officer.
He said that at one point. He later changed his story. There are several kind of changing stories involved in
this. And several accounts of this whole episode.
Over 36 witnesses, the district attorneys said that they, took statements from, interviewed in some way to try to piece together what happened at this scene. But again, it boils down to really just a couple of seconds when the officers chose to fire. And there's a question of fact around that. One of the officers stated very clearly that he perceived Amilcar Perez Lopez coming at him with the knife, thought he was going to be stabbed when he decided to shoot. That's very difficult to reconcile with the fact that Perez Lopez was shot all 6 times from behind, one of which was sort of from the side, but also from the back, right? Just to be very specific about that.
And they come up with a notion, though, that the police officer had to get his gun cocked and shoot and so forth, and that would account for the fact that he was shot in the back?
Yeah, so this gets into what we can call use of force science, which is, I think, respected by some circles and questioned by others. And oftentimes when you get into the civil arena, you'll see these use of force experts testifying for both sides with very different perceptions of how, one of these incidents may have played out. In this case, we heard from one who reconciled the police officer's statements with the fact that Amilcar Perez Lopez was shot in the back by saying by the time the officer made the decision to shoot, there's up to a couple of second delay between what they're perceiving and the action that they're taking. And so the officer could have thought in his mind that Perez Lopez was still charging at him when by the time he chose to shoot, Perez Lopez could have turned around. There's another piece of that analysis that is that an officer's perception will change from noticing what the suspect is doing to the mechanics of firing their weapon accurately. And so this use of force expert says that oftentimes officers will be much more detailed and specific in saying what happened just before the shooting as to what was happening as they were firing their weapon, because their focus has changed.
There's a lot of details here, though, that need to be fleshed out. I mean, first of all, these officers were in plain clothes, right?
Yes, they were plain clothes officers.
Some said they showed their badges and others said they didn't show their badges.
Yeah, and this gets into there are conflicting statements from, the over 36 witnesses who either heard something, saw something, or some combination of the two. And it's unclear whether the officers identified themselves as police. They were most likely only speaking in English. And Amilcar Perez Lopez might not have understood English very well.
He was pretty intoxicated, too.
As well. Yeah, 0.19 blood alcohol level, which was described as, significantly impaired.
Talking again with Alex Emsley, this certainly at the time it occurred 2 years ago caused a great deal of protest. There was some protest last night, but it seemed to be modified by the rain and died down to some degree.
This case has been it had an interesting trajectory, I think, in that it was one that when it initially happened, there was concern about it. But the fact that all of these 6 shots came from behind or to the side and behind of Amilcar Perez Lopez didn't come out till some months later. The case was not caught. There's no video of the actual shooting. There is video evidence of some things that happened around before or after. So in a lot of ways, it floated under the radar of some more high-profile shootings for a while until an independent autopsy came out later on, backed up by the official medical examiner's office.
Which has led to the civil suit by the parents, pretty much. I mean, they're basing it on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the idea that it's very hard to believe that a man could be shot in the back while also charging at the shooter with a knife.
Let me open the phone lines, talking again with Alex Emsley, and I want to invite our listeners to join us. And before I do that, let's just hear from Richard Smith. This is a clip of a Mission District priest named Richard Smith responding to the decision. He advocated for a trial in the case since the shooting.
We're not saying the officers are guilty. We're just saying we need our day in court for our sake, for their sake, so that all the evidence could be brought to light in the light of day. Witnesses could be examined and cross-examined in the light of day. All of that could be done in full view. That just seems like not too much to ask.
Well, I'm going to ask you, our listeners, to join us here. In fact, let me give you a phone number that's toll-free, and you can weigh in here, and you can also ask any questions or pretty much express whatever's on your mind. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. This is a half-hour segment, so now would be the time to call. Again, toll-free, wherever you're listening to us or however, 866-733-6786. We welcome you joining the program. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We're going to go to your calls and emails. Let me go first to San Francisco District Attorney George Gascon discussing his decision not to charge the two officers.
Nonetheless, I want to squarely address the concern of many over Perez Lopez having been shot from behind. Even if we reject the use of force experts' analysis about how Perez Lopez could have turned after Rivoli had already made a decision to shoot, and even if we reject Rivoli's statement that Perez Lopez was coming towards him with a knife when he fired his weapon, the law in this area is very clear. From a legal perspective, the shooting would still be justified.
All right, let me go to a listener comment here. And often in these kind of tragic episodes, whatever the verdict may be or whatever the investigation may ultimately wind up presenting, I get this kind of comment. I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, Alex. Listener writes, lots of policemen fail to recognize the irreversible process and finality of pulling the trigger on a gun. Most are trained to shoot to kill. We can incapacitate wild animals using tranquilizer guns. Why can't we do the same with people?
Okay, there's several things there. I have never met a police officer, and I've met quite a few, who fails to recognize the significance of pulling the trigger on their gun. My own personal experience with that, that just doesn't bear out. I've spoken to officers who have been involved in fatal shootings, and I shouldn't mince words there, who have fatally shot people in the line of duty. And this is something that is a traumatic experience for the officer, and I don't want that to get lost. I think any officer who's ever done that, it sticks with them for the rest of their life. Officers are trained to shoot to kill is a sort of long-standing misconception, I think, but they do aim for center mass. That is the area that they're most likely to hit when they've made a decision to use lethal force. And it is also the area where there are many vital organs. So I think the counter argument is usually, well, why don't officers shoot for the arm, shoot for the leg? And I think the response generally to that is, if you want to encourage officers to use their guns when lethal force wouldn't be justified, more shootings would happen. Also, it's difficult to do that kind of trick shooting in real time. But I don't want to get lost that this is a very serious thing. What we're seeing in this case is a long, perhaps too long, investigation, but that was very thorough and did take this case, seriously. People may disagree with the outcome. I think that there's some question as to whether some of the theorizing or conclusions come to by this use of force expert may have been better determined by a jury. But nevertheless, we're seeing a serious look into these kinds of shootings and more transparency in terms of the outcome of the investigation.
It was a very difficult investigation, though, because you had all these differing accounts. You had witnesses that were afraid to come forward because they felt the police would retaliate against them, undocumented and so forth. It was really a labyrinth.
Yes. Yeah. I think it was incredibly complimented. And let's talk about the two witnesses that you're referring to there. They're not classified as independent witnesses because they lived with Amilcar Perez Lopez. They were roommates of him. They knew him. And it's interesting because when they initially told police, you know, around the day or a couple of days following the shooting, when they were contacted a couple of times, that they hadn't seen anything. That story later changed. And their explanation was they were fearful to give statements to police, to give testimony, partially because it was just a general fear of officials and police officers. And it may have possibly also been because of their immigration status. I did speak to one of these men at length a while back when after he had decided to come forward and tell, you know, a full accounting of what he had seen from about 90 feet away of this shooting. It's interesting because the district attorney's investigation found that almost everything that those witnesses said was true in terms of their perception, that they, you know, their vision was obstructed for some parts of the case, but they were, you know, their presence outside was corroborated. And the things that they said they saw the officers do is also backed up by evidence in the officer's statements and other witnesses' statements, etc. But the crux of both of those witnesses' testimony or statements was that they saw the officer shoot Amilcar Perez Lopez in the back as he was running away. Well, they couldn't have seen whether this other man who Amilcar Perez Lopez may have been running toward. They didn't see him. Their vision of his position
was blocked,
obstructed.
Impeded, yeah. And the irony is there are 9 videos of this, but none of the shooting. Let me go to our callers, and let's begin, Charlie, with you. You're on the air. Morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. You know, a tragic incident that happened, but I just want to kind of question or get some feedback on, you know, there should be some accountability for a 20-year-old young man who's publicly intoxicated, and he's wielding a knife. And I think we're quick to blame the police, and ultimately they shot the gentleman. Again, very tragic, but they have a very difficult job, and it seems like we are quick to jump on the police rather than take a look and realize that these things are complicated and law enforcement, you know, is for the most part, I mean, the people I know that do it have the best intentions.
Yeah, well, thank you for the comment, and I have some thoughts on that. The police officers they do have a difficult job, but that has to be balanced with, and I think the caller mentioned this, that the seriousness of the outcome of their decisions in these split seconds. And I think that we've seen some heightened public attention and perception, questioning, criticism of police use of force over the past couple of years. One reason that might be, and if it is swung too far to the point of being unfair, is that there has been an extreme lack of transparency around these incidents, around the outcomes of internal investigation, around how decisions of whether an officer should face criminal charges in these cases are made. And there are policing policy evolutions that are sort of in the works that may, in the end, end up decreasing the number of fatal shootings that we see by police officers. But the law as to whether any of these shootings may be criminal or illegal or not, that really isn't changing. But what we have seen change is an acknowledgement, I think, by public officials, by district attorneys up to the state attorney general and the U.S. attorney general in the previous presidential administration, that more transparency can engender a little bit more trust or at least understanding of how these incidents happen and what happens after.
The big issue continues in many ways to be trust with the public. I mean, and transparency, as you've indicated, you wonder about how accumulation, Mario Woods, Louis Scangora in the Mission District, Jessica Williams in the Bayview, how this ultimately is going to affect the DA's office and just a sense of the police doing the job that they have to do. Anthony tweets, as a former police officer and combat veteran, I appreciate the balance. It's hard to know when to shoot or not shoot. And Zachary says, what does the DA mean by the law is still clear? What law justifies being shot in the back? Let me go to more of your calls, and let's get Carl on here next. Carl, you're on. Morning.
Yep. Hi, Michael. I just wanted to point out that in the exact vicinity of the gentleman's death, four other homeless individuals have died or been killed violently within a year. The Intermission neighborhood, is having lots of community meetings about tents and homelessness, but people are literally dying right around 16th and Shotwell. A couple was killed with a handgun in a tent, but literally 20 feet away from where the other gentleman was killed that we're discussing. There's unresolved deaths of people, all right around there. And I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, Carl, and I thank you. Alex Emsley?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because there's a legitimate focus on state uses of deadly force. It's difficult to then talk about every occurrence of violence in general, right? We have to kind of focus
case to case.
Yeah, it is case to case. That said, it's important to, I think, acknowledge or keep in mind that incidents of violence happen that aren't in any way initiated or directed by the police, and then police are in the position of trying to find who's responsible and bring that person to answer for those charges. I think one thing that is very difficult for most major police departments to do is bring up their clearance rates of these kinds of homicides, of criminal murders that occur throughout major cities. Generally, those run at around 50%, so half of those homicides are solved at any given time. If more were, there is some pretty strong theory that it would decrease the number of homicides that occur.
This all started over a bicycle?
Yeah, back to the Emil Carperez Lopez case. That is one of at least three different accounts of how this altercation between this man referred to in the district attorney's report as Abraham P. and Emil Carperez Lopez may have started. That description comes from Abraham P., who was a participant in this fight. There was not really any evidence that could corroborate that statement that I was able to discern in the district attorney's
Another version is he was bullying Perez Lopez. But let me get another caller on here quickly. David, that's you. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me. It's not just a matter of the police brutality and violence. I live in San Francisco and longtime resident of the East Bay, and there's been plenty of scandal within the sheriffs and police departments and within different sorts of activities, everything from prostitution schemes to drug schemes and drug smuggling. And,
Alex has covered extensively, we ought to add. It always boils down to questions of transparency and what the police are doing and how they're serving the public.
And accountability, I think, too, which we are seeing some changes around that. But I would hasten to add that an individual officer in any police department can't answer for broader systemic scandals that occur. So these officers weren't involved in the East Bay prostitution scandal. These officers weren't involved in racist text messaging scandals out of the SFPD that we know of. I think there's a bit of a broad brush there.
Alex, thank you for joining us. Thank you for all the good work you do. We're going to go in another segment. We're going to talk about breastfeeding in the workplace. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.